It was a story that I have heard in one form or another plenty of times. It was also particular and specific because it was about these dear, radiant, loving friends we were sharing a meal with, these people right in front of us. This time together almost hadn't happened. William, the father of the family, fell terribly ill this past winter. It was touch and go for a while. He was in the hospital for 2 months, and the doctors were stumped, and everyone feared and expected the worst. And then, incredibly, treatment began to work. He began to heal, and slowly they began to hope. When we were together, William had been home for about a week. He was still using a wheelchair, but he was taking more steps each day, and he was grinning, and he was cracking jokes. His wife, Olga, recounted the whole saga to us. Arriving at the present day, she named that his recovery was absolutely a miracle. He wasn't supposed to make it, she said, but look at him. How could anyone see this and not believe in God? I batted back tears along with her, nodding. It did seem like a miracle, and I was so thankful. And stories like this one can feel awfully distant on days like today, in times like these, at least for me. What about when our lives deliver us to the cross instead? What if we were to acknowledge the times we've prayed and prayed but received no answer? The times when the miracle didn't come for us? My God, why have you forsaken me and are so far from my cry and the words of my distress? Oh, my God, I cry in the daytime, but you do not answer, by night as well, but I find no rest. These are the haunting words of the psalmist. The psalm is attributed to King David, but we don't really know who wrote it. Still, we see the depths of their soul there. Even without knowing any specifics of what is happening, we can hear the quiver in their voice, see the slumping of their shoulders, imagine how their legs have gone weak on account of the torment that racks them. We hear of persecution, division, isolation, and deep, deep fear. We hear their heartache. It's not just that the psalmist is hounded by people all around them. It's that they feel entirely lost to God. From the cross, then, Jesus echoes these painful words. In the Gospels of Mark and Matthew, he cries out, just as the psalmist does, my God, why have you forsaken me? Here in the Gospel of John, we see a more stoic Jesus, one who seems to understand just how the story will go, even as he is in great pain right now. But these other gospels add another element to his suffering. It's not just that his disciples have largely scattered here at the end, save the brave few who remain with him at the cross. It's not just his physical agony as his body slowly gives way. Far worse, it's that he can't seem to find God. He can't hear God or sense God's presence there in the pit of his suffering. As I've been sitting with the Passion this year, as I've prayed with it and walked around trying to find my way in, I found myself pondering a question that had never occurred to me before. If Jesus speaks the opening verse of Psalm 22 from the cross, I wondered if maybe he keeps going with the psalm, letting one well-worn verse follow after another, the familiar words slowly leading him back to the truth of who he is and whose he is. Because here's the wild thing about this psalm. As heartbreaking as it is, it doesn't remain there. Not entirely. It stretches out, grasping towards trust. Do you hear it? Can you let the surprise of it, the beauty of it, sink into your bones? Listen again. I have been entrusted to you ever since I was born. You were my God when I was still in my mother's womb. There is such trust present in this psalm. The confidence of being held even when we can't tell that God is near. Even when by all outward measures we are lost, even through the pain. Does Jesus say these words too? Do they help him remember whence he came? Do they help him choose again where to aim his heart? Could they help us do the same? As I prayed and wrestled and wrote and deleted and puzzled more through these stories, a surprising image arose for me this week, one that felt awfully unlikely, but it's what came. And I ask that you would just take a chance with me in running with it here. In the final book of the Harry Potter series, something that has gotten a lot of airtime in my household, in the final book, all hell has broken loose. The most evil wizard of all time, Voldemort, is back in power and his cronies are acting with impunity. Harry and his brilliant classmate, Hermione, are on the run, trying to escape the wrath of Voldemort while also plotting to overthrow him and restore peace to the wizarding world. It is a terrifying and lonely time for them. They are desperate for help, but they are finding none. And in the midst of this strife, Harry watches with awe and also confusion as Hermione begins pulling out just what they need from a small beaded handbag. Spare clothes, thick wizarding textbooks, exactly the healing potions that their ailments call for in this moment, even a tent to sleep in as they hide out in the woods. In all her cleverness, Hermione had placed an undetectable extension charm, as my daughter explained to me, on the little handbag, such that it still looked unremarkable from the outside, but was now infinitely spacious on the inside. This little bag could now hold everything they might need. And here, I want to offer the tender suggestion that perhaps this psalm is the miracle we need today. That perhaps it is our small beaded handbag. It does not fix everything, just as the contents of Hermione's bag did not solve their bigger problems. But this psalm, like the bag, has room for everything. It begins in such honest desolation, naming the truth of the writer's heartbreak and their fear that God has abandoned them. But woven together with that heartbreak is the remembering that they came from God, that God knew them from their first moments. And they begin reclaiming this trust again. The psalm doesn't stay there. This is not just a happy ending of a psalm tying things up with a bow after a brief moment of distress. After remembering this trust that started right from the womb, the psalmist continues recounting the terror they are facing. They can't find help. Bulls are circling them. They are completely wrung out. The pain is real and the struggle is long. And then, again, the psalm weaves in another thread, perhaps even more surprising than the trust. They utter words of praise. I will declare your name to my kin, to my companions, they say. In the midst of the congregation, I will praise you. Even in the fear, there is gratitude. Even in the pain, there is praise. This psalm holds it all. This psalm shows us what God is like. And maybe this is our miracle. As much as I would love for God to swoop in and fix everything that is broken in our world, I take heart in remembering that God is big enough to hold all of this. I'm encouraged to remember that we are following a God who teaches us how to be more spacious in our own hearts, helping us learn how to hold seemingly opposite things together at once. That is, after all, what the cross is for us, an exercise in what appear to be impossible contradictions. It is torture and humiliation, pain and death, and it is also a gift and hope and the promise of transformation. We're not there yet. Not to the point of those glorious hymns, not to the wide-eyed revelation that life comes again. We will get there soon. But for now, for today, we can take heart in the miracle that there is room for the full spectrum of life with God. There is room for our pain and fear, and also room for our trust and gratitude. God holds all of this for us and with us. And God leads us in making more room in our own hearts as well.